Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. With us now is Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief of USA Today. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be back with you.
First, on the Washington impact of the Connecticut school shooting. Of course, we've been talking about the gun law issue on this program in the last hour. And the Sunday talk shows made it seem like the usual politicians are choosing up the usual sides. We had a caller just before the news who was extremely frustrated with that. Do you see anything different politically about this moment than after the movie theater massacre or any of the others?
You know, I'm sorry to tell you, I don't see things being very different. The only political figure here who has been a bit of a surprise in their reaction is Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, which is definitely a state that likes its guns and would oppose a lot of gun laws. He was on MSNBC this morning, and he said that everything should be on the table. But he didn't endorse any specific measures, and there's no outpouring here, I think, among people who have previously been reluctant to enact new gun laws or to tighten existing gun laws who are out there speaking. The people who are out there speaking are the people who are the familiar voices who have been pushing for gun laws for some time.
And President Obama has been so opaque in his statement, saying things like these tragedies must end or we need a meaningful response. Is there any indication of what he's getting at a policy level?
There is not. And so, we're told that there were not meetings at the White House over the weekend on legislative proposals to push or how exactly to put meat on the bones of his statement that real action has to be taken and that we must act to prevent future tragedies. Now, it's clear that the president's been really touched, as who could not be, but really touched by this shooting. You know, when he came out on Friday, it was the most emotional I've ever seen him be in public. And his comments last night were so somber. But I think we're still in the state of waiting to see what will happen, because I can tell you nothing will happen in Washington unless President Obama makes it a personal cause of his own to make it happen, because this would be a hard fight and it would require presidential leadership to make it happen.
And so on that point, is this a question of there only being so much political capital to spread around, and if he spends it on gun laws, it hurts his ability to get what he wants on tax hikes for the wealthy or anything else?
Well, it's certainly true that a president only has so much capital, and he has to decide how to spend it. But in terms of the tax hikes for the wealthy, you know, we're well on the way, it became clear this weekend, to a deal on that. And I think that's going to get resolved in the next 2 weeks. So it might be a question, does he make if he's going to make a real push on gun laws, he needs to do it fast. It needs to be in the State of the Union. It needs to be perhaps his first big initiative coming out of the fiscal cliff talks and the negotiations. After that, does he want to make that gun laws, or does he want to make that immigration reform, or does he want to make it something else? And those are kind of the cold-blooded calculations that politicians, especially presidents, have to make.
And we'll come back to the fiscal cliff in a minute. But I've actually been wondering if this is a New York conceit that the national conversation on assault weapons might actually change because of this. I realize that it's also because this was 20 children, which makes it different from other such massacres. But we've been asking the same thing about global warming, right? Whether Sandy will finally be a turning point for taking that seriously in Washington, but who knows? And maybe in both these cases, the only thing that's really different is that they happened in New York, in the New York metro area, the media capital of the world, rather than a hurricane in New Orleans or a shooting in Aurora, Colorado. So maybe we're just all so self-important in this area to think that if it happens here, it changes the politics or changes dug-in beliefs, maybe, maybe not.
Well, you know, if that's true of New Yorkers, it would also be true of people in Iowa and New Hampshire and other places I've covered, right? Everybody thinks they live at the center of the universe, including people in Washington. And, of course, You do have some of the nation's most prominent leaders on this issue in New York, which Governor Cuomo definitely has been out there. You know, Mayor Bloomberg's leadership on this issue, it seems to me, could really make a difference. He's in this interesting position coming out of his tenure as mayor, and with the prominence that he's got and the credibility he has, but I think not everyone sees the gun issue the same way. And you know, I grew up in Kansas, and people in Kansas see the gun issue in a different way than people in New York do, because there are lots of people who hunt and who farm and for whom guns are a very natural thing. On the other hand, no one in Kansas would look at the use of assault weapons against six-year-olds and say, this is something that doesn't require us to take some action to keep it from happening again.
Well, then be a Kansas interpreter for us in the New York area listenership and tell us how you think people who own guns, people who, you know, believe strongly in gun rights, would react to specifically the two things that seem to be put on the table as a result of this and Aurora, for that matter. The extended capacity magazines, where people can have so many rounds at their disposal, you know, at once, basically, and the nature of this Bushmaster gun called an M16 knockoff that really is the kind of thing that people would use in the military. You don't go out into the woods and hunt deer with it. And, you know, the critics would say there just is no legitimate use for this that should protect it, you know, any more than, I don't know, your personal nuclear weapon or something like that under the Second Amendment's right to bear arms.
Yeah. You know, there are some provisions of gun laws that I think have pretty wide support and support among gun owners as well as people who don't own guns. And that would be the things you talk about. I mean, closing the gun show loophole, banning these high-capacity magazines, reinstating the ban on assault weapons. Those are not things that, in terms of public support, you have a hard time making a case for. We know that those have overwhelming majority supporting them. But that's not how the politics always works, as you know, because the people on the other side of the issue often have more intensity of feeling than the people who support tighter gun laws. And you also have this situation in the House of Representatives where most of the Republicans in the House of Representatives have taken a pretty hard line against gun laws. The National Rifle Association continues to be a real force in Washington, and it just makes it hard to do even things on which there is majority support.
Susan,
not impossible. Doesn't mean it couldn't be done, but it means you have to spend some capital to do it.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, our guest, 212-433-WNYC. And let's go on to that so-called fiscal cliff. T-minus 15 days now before the gradual changes it involves would begin to take effect. Changes all at once on paper, gradual for their impact. I see how Speaker John Boehner has taken a public step here and proposed a rate increase on Americans making $1 million or more in exchange for serious spending cuts. The fact that he even said tax rate increase is a break with Grover Norquist and the Republican imperative, right?
Yes. Well, he said two things that are incredibly significant in terms of fiscal cliff negotiations. One is he said tax rates, and they can go up. I mean, even if it's just on people who make $1 million and more. The other thing he said was debt ceiling, that they would agree under the deal that he's proposing to raise the debt ceiling for a period of a year, giving up the biggest piece of leverage that Republicans would have in the new year. So I think that with these, with this offer, this opening on the part of John Boehner, we can feel increasingly confident that there's going to be a deal on the fiscal cliff, and it's going to do more than kick the can down the road for 6 weeks. It's going to be something that gets us through another year or so.
What's the Democratic response so far?
Well, so Boehner has come up to about $1 trillion. There's no formal Democratic response so far. But you can see the two sides coming together, right? When you talk about increased revenues. So President Obama has gone from $1.6 trillion to $1.4 trillion. The White House says maybe they'd go to $1.2 trillion. Boehner has gone from $800 billion to $1 trillion. So, you know, you can split it. You don't have to even take it, having taken high school math, to know you could split that difference and get someplace. And this, what may turn out to be a more difficult issue at this point is agreeing on what you do on spending cuts, because that will be the price of Republican cooperation on taxes and the debt ceiling. And the president's been at, $600 billion. The Republicans want it to be equal to the amount you get in new revenues. But, again, you can kind of see where both sides seem to be increasingly willing to kind of come to a deal that neither will love, but that both would be able to accept.
Is there one issue on which the White House is now going to turn around and get specific and public about to, you know, take a kind of hit with his base that John Boehner may be now taking with the right on the $1 million a year rate increase threshold, mm-hmm. and on including the debt ceiling? Is this going to be, you know, is this the dance now? Obama's got to come out and say raise the Medicare eligibility age or whatever the thing happens to be.
Yes, I think that would have to happen, and you could see some of the issues on which that might be. You know, it might be this this thing none of us could describe a week ago, and now we're all experts on, which is called chain CPI, which is, you know, changing the cost of living, the way cost of living increases are negotiated. You know, if the White House said they
that's
would apply
for people,
that,
that's for people on Social Security, right? How much that check goes up each year?
Right, and other programs as well. But so for other beneficiaries of other federal entitlement programs as well, and it means that it's an adjustment that just has a little effect initially, but it accrues over time, so it has a significant financial effect, and it reduces the amount that the cost of living increase would go up. That would be a big concession on the part of the White House, and something that Republicans would probably feel like they had gotten something real for their own compromises.
John, on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC with Susan Page. Hi.
Hi. I'm a recent resident of the United States, and I really don't understand why the lobbyists from the NRA has such a big lobbying, contingency and strength in Washington, and why is it that so many people on the right and the left they're actually scared of the NRA and their lobbyists? What kind of delegates their strength? Is it because of your Constitution that people are allowed to carry weapons, or?
It's a great question. And Susan, yeah. You know, you say if somebody came from Mars or another country, what would they notice first about the United States? And one of the things is apparently the power of the NRA. So let me unpack John's question a little bit, because maybe there are two things going on. How much is this that there really are just cultural differences around the country? You were talking about coming from the Midwest, and people there look at this differently from people in New York City, et cetera. And how much is it that there are a lot of Republicans who really would vote for some of these gun laws, but they are literally scared of the power of the NRA, as John put it?
Well, first I would say to John that even people who've lived there their whole lives are perplexed by this issue. So I feel like it's only people who've just recently moved here. You know, I think it's a couple things. Let's not forget it. There is a constitutional protection for the right to bear arms. And as fervently as I feel about the First Amendment, some gun owners feel about the Second Amendment. There is the cultural aspect of it, which is real and different in different parts of the country. And then there's just the raw politics of it. You know, what is a Republican member of the House most afraid of? It is a primary challenge, because districts are drawn now so that there were only six, I believe this is right, six Republicans in the House of Representatives elected from districts that President Obama carried, right? Everybody else, every other Republican member of the House is in a district that is very Republican, and virtually the only way that member is going to lose his or her seat is if they get challenged from the right in a primary. And the National Rifle Association has been very active politically. It's very clear whether, you know, they don't care how you vote on some other issues. They care how you vote on gun laws. They spend a lot of money. It's a very well-funded political action committee, and that's given them a lot of clout. You know, the other thing that happens with the NRA is some people get very passionate about gun laws after a horrible tragedy like we saw on Friday. And then life goes on, and they go on to other interests, and they have other priorities. The NRA only has one priority. They are unrelenting. And after other people have forgotten about the gun debate, they will still be there pushing their side of it.
Let's take another call, and that's Matt in Newton, New Jersey. Matt, you're on WNYC. Hello. Matt, you there? All right, we'll try to get Matt. Let me go on to another issue. We were talking about political capital from one policy issue to the next. Was Susan Rice's Secretary of State nomination the scalp that Obama had to sacrifice to get this tax and spending compromise on track?
I don't think it's a trade. I don't think there was some wink and a nod that, okay, I won't nominate Susan Rice and you'll come to a deal on the fiscal cliff. But I think it kind of cleared the decks. It meant that there wasn't going to be a battle royale here on confirming Susan Rice, and Democrats weren't going to be asked to take a tough stand on that. For some of them, you know, it just made it more possible to focus on the fiscal cliff. But I don't think it was that it was a kind of tit for tat kind of thing. No.
Is John Kerry going to be the next Secretary of State?
Yeah, almost certainly. I mean, everyone in town will be very surprised, including John Kerry, will be really surprised if that doesn't happen. It's a job he's wanted for a long time. He's done a lot of work, carried a lot of water for President Obama on foreign policy in the last 4 years. So, yes, there's every expectation that he will. The question is, will President Obama announcing essentially a new foreign policy national security team for his second term, will they all be white men? Which hasn't happened in 20 years. And I think that's an issue the White House is now wrestling with. But I think it's more likely to affect, say, the nomination for Secretary of Defense than it is to upend John Kerry's long march to be Secretary of State.
Well, won't Susan Rice, who's a black woman, still be part of the national security team, just not nominated for Secretary of State?
True. Yeah, that's true. But if you look at the big prominent public jobs, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and a new CIA director, all the likely candidates there are white men. And we don't know if Susan Rice is going to stay at the UN. You know, there's some talk maybe she would become the National Security Advisor, which would again be part of the president's national security apparatus. But it is remarkable that. If you think about the big four cabinet jobs, which are the most important, prominent, prestigious jobs in the president's administration, that it's been 20 years since all four of those have been filled by white men, and that is a situation. Of course, we've got Eric Holder as Attorney General, so that I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Three of them would be
right,
but of course Eric Holder would still be in one of those big four.
So if it's John Kerry, there'll be another special election for U.S. Senator in Massachusetts for Scott Brown to run in?
They apparently love these special elections in Massachusetts.
Eddie in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, on Saturday, one site gave me a listing of the guns that Mrs. Lanza owned. And I Googled Bushmaster .223 carbine. The first site that showed up on the Internet was Walmart.com. And this is because Walmart sells this weapon. If Walmart, which is the biggest retailer in America, would stop selling these weapons, it would be a first step to get these weapons off the street.
But, of course, they won't. These are legal in the United States. And I don't think Walmart or maybe any other major retailer that exists in a lot of rural areas, for example, is going to say, well, we're just not going to do that. In fact, I've heard commercials on one of the conservative talk radio stations here, so they must be running nationwide. Susan, and I guess this is legal, for a website where you can order guns online, and they say they'll help you through whatever your state's background check is. And then they say, you know, basically buy your gun, help keep America safe. So they're advertising an online national website for gun purchases where they will help you get through the licensing requirements in your state, and they're advertising explicitly as a way, it's a way to keep America safe.
Yeah, but of course that's a point of view of a great number of Americans.
Right.
That gun ownership is a way to combat a too powerful government or to protect yourself and your family in a dangerous world. And that's not the view of everyone. And we see what terrible purposes some of these weapons have been put to. But as you say, it's legal, and that reflects the point of view of a fair number of people.
And we were talking about the gun laws in China earlier in the program, comparing this to the mass knifing of 22 schoolchildren there by a deranged guy last week. And all of those children survived. But there's a lot of gun control in China. I guess one could probably draw the conclusion that that's not just a public safety measure in China. They don't want the people rising up against the state. But do you think that this incident might give traction to the Republican argument? I don't even want to say the Republican argument, but the NRA argument that right to carry laws should be loosened in response to Newtown, that literally more guns equals more safety, and that, as Congressman Louis Gohmert, Republican from Texas, said on Fox News Sunday yesterday, that if only there was a teacher in the school who was armed, particularly one who confronted the gunman, that she would have been, a hero who was alive instead of a hero who was dead?
Yeah. I think there are probably some gun advocates who might respond that way. As you heard, I didn't actually hear that congressman speak yesterday, but to have that point of view. But the fact is that when we've had these massacres in the past, it's bolstered the side of people who want to restrict guns, not just politically, but in terms of public opinion. There's been a bump or a boost, sometimes long-lasting, sometimes not, for more action against guns in the wakes of things like this. But there are people who feel that way. Not to call it about Kansas, but when I go back there, there's a concealed carry law, and there are signs in front of grocery stores and restaurants that say no guns allowed, because unless you post it outside, people are allowed to bring their guns in all kinds of places.
And I guess this debate will obviously go on, from any number of perspectives. Before you go, how's Hillary Clinton?
I think she's all right. I don't have independent reporting on this, so I know what you know, which is that it sounds like she got sick and dehydrated and fainted and bumped her head, and we hope she's doing all right. I haven't heard anything different. So let's hope so, because she's definitely one of those most interesting figures in Washington and has certainly done a lot and had quite the tenure as Secretary of State.
Of course, and they say she's got a concussion from the fall when she fainted, apparently as a result of the stomach flu. And I'm just curious if there's any pushback from Republicans about her canceling her testimony about Benghazi this week and sending an assistant secretary of state in her place because of the injury, they say.
Right. So there are conspiracy theories with everybody everywhere. And I think there is some talk that they would like her to come and testify about Benghazi in the future after her concussion after she's all better, after getting rid of her concussion and the flu. So I think there are some Republicans who would like a chance to question her directly about that incident, yes.
One more call. Rebecca in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just had a thought that would it be any more feasible to enact tax measures against guns and bullets, and then that funding could you be used to help the mental health treatment facilities, or we think the gun lobby would also be opposed to taxation?
Well, I'm sure they would be opposed, but that's a pretty interesting proposal in a certain way, Susan, because one of the things, as we were discussing earlier in the show, is that even if you were to ban assault weapons or extended capacity clips going forward, there are so many of them out and around in America that basically they would still be available to people who wanted to get them. But Rebecca suggests making bullets less available. And if you control bullets, well, you have to keep getting bullets if you're going to use your guns.
And also Rebecca's suggestion kind of ties together the fiscal cliff with a revenue raiser. Exactly. But the one thing that behind Rebecca's question is, what do we do about the mental health side of this? Because guns are one side of this, and the availability of these assault weapons and these big capacity magazines are part of this. But the mental health system here is an item of that's also part of these massacres, and it's so we think gun law is tough. I mean, trying to figure out how to make sure mentally ill people are identified and that there's appropriate intervention. I mean, that is, if anything, I think an even tougher issue and one that we also need to be addressing and talking about.
Well, so on this point, here is Senator-elect Chris Murphy of Connecticut, member of the House now. He was just elected in November, as our listeners in Connecticut certainly know. And unlike his colleague, Senator Blumenthal, who went right to the extended capacity clip question, Murphy on ABC this week was much more nuanced.
As I think eager as people are going to be to find some simple solution from a policy standpoint, we have to acknowledge that there is no simple solution, that yes, there needs to be a conversation about gun control, but also about the way we treat mental illness, also about the culture of violence in this country, which may have contributed to the way in which this very disturbed young man thought.
So this is what I keep hearing from a lot of people. Okay, yes, we need to talk about the gun laws, but we also need to talk about mental health. And then we all go back to talking about the details of the gun laws. So is there anything on the table with respect to mental health?
There's not that I know of. And of course, traditionally, turning to talk about mental health has been a dodge from talking about gun laws,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I don't want to talk about gun laws. Let's talk about mental health because that's even harder. You know, the solutions there are so perplexing that we'll get meshed in that and never get back to gun laws. I mean, that's what's traditionally happened. So maybe we should focus on gun laws. But the reality is, I think Senator-elect Murphy makes a good point that this is, look, there's not going to be one thing that's going to solve this problem, prevent it from ever happening again. But maybe there are a series of things that could happen. Maybe we could close the gun loophole and restrict these big magazines and not do something and try to talk a little more about mental health and intervention and try to do it one step at a time, because it does seem just hugely daunting to try to address where we've gotten in this country when it comes to guns and violence.
Well, we certainly know one thing. After the election of President Obama, I don't know if you noticed this, right after Election Day, gun sales ticked up. And people say it was because some folks assume that without the specter of another reelection, that one of the things Obama was going to do was try to take away people's guns or right to buy guns. And I haven't looked, but I would guess that as a result of Newtown, gun sales probably went up this weekend rather than went down. And we'll see if that turns out to be true. But that says a lot about the debate in this country.
Yeah.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.